Thank you for tuning in to the WOLA podcast, Latin America Today, and the Just the Facts podcast. It's Friday, January 25th, 2013. I'm Adam Isaacson, Senior Associate for Regional Security Policy here at WOLA. It's time for a Week Ahead podcast. I'll be looking at a meeting in Chile of Latin America's leaders, uncertainty about President Chavez in Venezuela, and the peace process in Colombia. First, Chile, where leaders from Latin America and Europe are arriving right now for two summits. The first of these is happening Saturday and Sunday in Santiago. It has a long official name, the Alliance for Sustainable Development to Promote Investments of Social and Environmental Quality. Officials from the European Union and from 17 of the 27 European Union member countries will be on hand for it. Also, there will be about 24 presidents of the 33 member countries of CELAC, C-E-L-A-C, the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States, which is a new political organization including every country in the hemisphere except the United States and Canada. Leaders of the European Union and Latin America have met six times since 1999. This is the seventh in what has become a series of biennial summits. This time, the European leaders attending include José Manuel Barroso, the President of the European Commission, Spanish President Mariano Rajoy, and German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Among Latin American presidents not attending are the leaders of El Salvador, Ecuador, Paraguay, and Venezuela, and I'll talk about Venezuela later. Discussions at this meeting will be mostly economic. When you combine the EU member states together, Europe is the biggest investor in Latin America. Trade, though, has sort of stagnated lately as the old continent has been in a deep economic crisis since the 2008 financial collapse. Still, hundreds of business executives from Europe will be on hand looking to make deals. While they won't be present at the meetings, there will also be a large presence in Santiago of civil society organizations, including trade, environmental, and human rights activists. The European leaders leave on Sunday, and the next day and a half in Santiago will be devoted to CELAC, the new regional body. CELAC has met twice before, once in 2010 in Mexico and once in Venezuela in 2011. The group does not have a permanent headquarters or secretariat. It's still trying to figure out, really, what its purpose is. At its first summit, the member countries agreed to use it for, quote, a fruitful and respectful dialogue on norms of international law, solid economic and financial relations based on integral and balanced trade liberalization and capital flows, and more cooperation on education, science, technology, culture, humanities, and social programs. That's a pretty broad mandate, and it remains unclear how CELAC distinguishes itself from other cooperation or integration bodies like UNASUR and ALBA, sub-regional blocs like CARICOM, SICA, and MERCOSUR, not to mention, of course, the OAS. One of the main distinctions, of course, is that this one excludes the United States and Canada, and that it includes Cuba, which remains suspended from the OAS. In fact, at this weekend's meeting, the pro tempore presidency of CELAC will pass from Chile to Cuba. 81-year-old Raúl Castro will be the chief face of CELAC for the next year. For some, this is a sign that Cuba's long diplomatic isolation in the region has ended. For others, though, giving a leadership role to the hemisphere's least democratic country undermines CELAC's credibility. I haven't seen much about what's on the agenda for the CELAC meeting this weekend. Last week, Colombian President Juan Manuel Santos rather surprisingly announced that he'd like to encourage a discussion with the other presidents and with Europe on guns, specifically ways to curtail arms trafficking via international cooperation, things like the arms trade treaty currently before the United Nations. It's notable that Santos's proposal came shortly after the Obama administration in Washington announced several new domestic gun control measures. The CELAC meeting will begin with a tribute to two former presidents, Lula da Silva of Brazil and Felipe Calderón of Mexico, as well as one current president who will be absent, Hugo Chavez of Venezuela. Until its turn to Venezuela, whose president has not been seen in public since December 11th when he boarded a plane from Caracas to Havana to undergo his fourth surgery for cancer since 2011. Hugo Chavez got reelected in early October after a campaign in which he insisted that he was free of an unspecified cancer that had required several treatments in Cuba. But then in early December, 2 months after his reelection and 1 month before his re-inauguration, Chavez rather emotionally announced that the disease had returned and that he needed to return to Cuba for another urgent cancer surgery. At this time, Chavez even named a possible successor, Vice President Nicolas Maduro, whom he said should succeed him if anything happens. Under Venezuelan law, however, if the president dies during the first 4 years of his six-year term, the vice president doesn't automatically take office. A special election has to be held to choose a new president within 30 days. President Chavez has not been seen since. There have been few details, but officials say that the president has been in serious condition. They've denied that he's in a coma or an induced coma or anything like that, but it is likely that Chavez has been unconscious for long periods of time. The president's convalescence has gone on for so long that he missed his inauguration, which was scheduled for January 10th. Leaders of Venezuela's opposition, among others, questioned whether the Constitution allowed Chavez to remain president if he was not duly sworn in by the Supreme Court on the appointed date. They argued that the Constitution would require the National Assembly, in fact, to declare the president temporarily absent, with the Assembly's president filling in for Chavez for 90 days, a period that could be extended once. But just before Inauguration Day, Venezuela's Supreme Court, whose justices are mostly pro-Chavez, ruled that the president did not need to be present on the 10th and that he could be sworn in whenever he was ready to do so. Quote, "We know it's necessary, and undoubtedly the inauguration is going to be carried out, but at this time we can't anticipate when," end of quote, said Supreme Court President Luisa Estela Morales. On January 15th, as Vice President Maduro stood in for President Chavez and delivered the annual State of the Nation address, he, unlike the president, spoke for only 10 minutes. That same day, the government produced a document naming Elias Jaua as the country's next foreign minister. The document, promulgated in Caracas, bears President Chavez's signature. This, as you might imagine, raised a lot of questions. In fact, there's a lot we don't know about what's happening in Venezuela. Above all, what's actually wrong with the president's health? Yesterday, Foreign Minister Jaua said that Chavez still faces the most complex phase of his recovery from his surgery. Jaua, who is in Havana visiting the president, did not give any details about what that actually means. It's still not even clear what kind of cancer Chavez has. Nobody has any idea when Chavez might return to Caracas. Quote, "We'll give the good news if there's good news, and the bad news if there's bad news," Information Minister Ernesto Villegas said yesterday, rather unilluminatingly. We also don't know how united the pro-Chavez political bloc actually is. In the second tier of the leadership, most analysts point to three key players: Vice President Maduro, National Assembly President Diosdado Cabello, and Oil Minister Rafael Ramirez. These three have not always gotten along. But if something happens to Chavez, they are the most likely pro-Chavez leaders to succeed him, or at least to influence the succession. Now, Maduro has Chavez's blessing. He's a former bus driver who's risen through the ranks of Chavismo and become perhaps the president's most trusted aide, serving until recently as foreign minister as well as vice president. He's seen as very ideological and close to Cuba's government, but also as easy to get along with, they say, and willing to be pragmatic. Observers often point to his role in arranging a rapprochement with Colombia when President Juan Manuel Santos sought to paper over differences with Caracas in 2010. He also has had at least one conversation with U.S. officials in recent months about the possibility of breathing new life into bilateral relations. Cabello is a former military officer. He participated in Chavez's abortive 1992 coup attempt. He's seen as closer to the armed forces than he's seen as close to Cuba, and thus probably is more of a nationalist than a socialist. The rumor mill hints that Cabello has been tolerant of the corruption, including drug corruption, that's said to be endemic in the armed forces right now. As for Ramirez, the oil minister, Reuters new wire service said, quote, "He's a power broker because of his control over the petrodollars that finance Chavez's much-loved social programs. He also heads a massive campaign to build homes for tens of thousands of families that helped Chavez win re-election." Also unclear among this mix of power brokers is the role that Cuba is playing at this moment. On the right wing, you hear frequently charges that the Castro brothers are calling the shots, pulling the strings in Venezuelan politics right now, that Venezuela is a Cuban protectorate, as Spain's El País newspaper put it this week. This begs the question, though, of why. Who needs whom more in this relationship? Cuba has provided Venezuela with a lot of doctors, community workers, organizers, and assistance on things like intelligence. But Cuba's economy would suffer a staggering blow if Venezuela were to stop subsidizing oil shipments. Also, it's very disputable how much influence Cuba has on Venezuela's armed forces. And where the military stands overall is another key unanswered question, in fact. If President Chavez does pass away, and the resulting transition is chaotic, it's the armed forces who may come to play an important mediating role. The Venezuelan military is often described as professional, but also rather cliquish, with lots of small power groups forming around individual officers. The high command is considered to be very politicized today, with all the top officers professing loyalty to Chavez's political program. But mid-level officers are probably more tied to the institution itself than to a particular political tendency. The analysts whom I've seen and spoken to seem to agree that in a crisis, Venezuela's military would not be crippled by divisions. It would, in fact, hold together. We should talk more about the Venezuelan military and also the reactions of neighboring countries in a future podcast. But for now, though, let's turn to another event going on in Havana right now, the peace talks between Colombia's government and the guerrillas of the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC. Yesterday, January 24th, both sides' negotiating teams ended a third round of talks. A new round will start on January 31st. They're on the first of five agenda items, and one of the most difficult, land tenure and rural development. Of the agenda topics that follow, one other has to deal with political reforms. That's topic four, drug policy. The others are more operational, but they can be difficult too. They are the FARC's future political participation, demobilization and accountability for abuses, and victims' rights. On the land issue, the two sides said that they found some common ground. Both seem to agree that the country's lopsided concentration of land in few hands is bad and needs to be addressed. This is, in fact, one of the core drivers of a conflict that will be 49 years old this year. But the government and the guerrillas disagree sharply about what to do about it. The FARC wants something akin to land reform, with millions of hectares of unproductive land taken from cattle ranchers and distributed to small farmers. The government wants to distribute unused state-owned land, plus land confiscated from narco-traffickers. The details are vague because the talks are happening in secret, but the BBC reported last week that the FARC wants 25 million hectares of Colombian farmland to be redistributed. That's unlikely to happen because it's more than 20% of the entire country's surface area. Over the course of the past week, the guerrillas have put out a series of 10 public proposals for land and rural development. Most of them are rather moderate, not as radical as you might have expected from the FARC, and they dovetail largely with a lot of what the Santos government has claimed it is trying to do anyway. Things like prioritizing production of food for domestic consumption, recognizing Afro-Colombian and indigenous landholdings, or establishing special reserve zones for small farmers. These proposals, though, have Colombia's powerful cattle ranching federation very angry and aligning even more closely with the country's far right led by former President Álvaro Uribe. Uribe remains popular in Colombia because several measures of violence went down sharply during his 8 years in office, but he opposes the peace talks and President Santos' approach to land restitution as well, and he's really become now the de facto leader of the political opposition. Meanwhile, on January 20th, the FARC announced that it would end the unilateral holiday ceasefire that it had declared 2 months earlier. Between November 20th and January 20th, according to Bogota's Corporación Nuevo Arcoíris think tank, the number of FARC attacks went down nearly 90% compared to the same period a year ago. But the attacks began again on the 20th. Not a large-scale offensive, as some police and military officers had been warning, but a steady drumbeat of ambushes and bombings, especially of oil and energy infrastructure. The guerrillas also appear to have murdered an indigenous leader in the embattled department of Cauca in southwestern Colombia. The Havana talks have been happening in secret, with little of their content emerging in public. That's for the best, because it keeps every detail of the negotiations from being aired before the media. Both sides in the talks have shown an impressive degree of restraint and discipline in their appearances before the press. There have been very few meaningful leaks. This is a positive sign for the talks, but there are some concerns about the pace. Yesterday, FARC negotiator Jesus Santrich said that the dialogues are moving very fast, at the pace of a mambo, in his words, but agreement on the first agenda topic appears far off. In December, when Colombia's interior minister said he hoped that by Easter the two sides would be done with the land tenure topic, lead government negotiator Humberto de la Calle contradicted him and said they did not, in fact, have any fixed deadlines. However, President Santos has said that by November of this year he wants the process to be complete, or at least close to being complete, or else he will abandon it. Either way, Colombia also sort of has a built-in deadline anyway. The country has congressional elections in March 2014 and presidential elections in May 2014. By the beginning of next year, Colombia's entire political system will be in full campaign mode. It will be very difficult to hold peace talks, especially delicate ones, in such a charged political atmosphere. It would be best to conclude the talks before the campaign season starts. And that's it for now. Thank you for listening to WOLA's Latin America Today and the Just the Facts podcast. Please keep listening. We're up on iTunes, where if you have a moment to write a review, we'd really appreciate the feedback, and it would help us a lot to reach new listeners, or even just click on the stars. Meanwhile, keep visiting WOLA's website, www.wola.org, and the Just the Facts website, www.justf.org. If you're finding these podcasts useful, please do consider making a donation to keep us going. You can also find both WOLA and Just the Facts on Facebook or on Twitter at WOLA_ORG and JustF_ORG. Hasta pronto.